Welcome to Disc 3 of the Marriage Max production of Marriage Fitness. Now, here again is the author, Mort Fertel.
Chapter 4, Put Love First. Step 1 of the Marriage Max 4-Step Plan. Millard Fuller was a small-town boy from modest means. He aspired to grand financial success and high status in the business community. He married his wife Linda when they were young. Although they struggled to make ends meet, they were happy. Millard worked hard in pursuit of his financial dream and became a millionaire when he was only 29 years old. The Fullers had it all: homes, cars, clothes, expensive vacations, jewelry, power, influence, security, whatever money could buy. However, as is often the case with success stories like this, the more Millard immersed himself in his business, the more he neglected his wife. Millard's marriage, which began as a passionate love affair, became his side business. His bank account grew by leaps and bounds, but his marriage account depleted just as quickly. Linda became frustrated with their marriage and began a silent protest. Millard's mind was at work when his body was home. He missed all the signs of Linda's quiet misery and continued to immerse himself in his business. Eventually, the situation became unbearable for Linda. One day, Linda visited Millard at his office and announced, "I don't think I love you anymore." Millard couldn't believe what he heard. Linda explained that he gave her everything she wanted, except what she wanted most, a husband. She wanted him, but he was unavailable. Millard promised Linda he would change, but one year later, he had not. Linda's patience was exhausted. She was completely disenchanted. Finally, Linda left Millard and traveled to New York. With Linda gone, Millard felt helpless. For the first time in his life, he was not in control. Millard's business was thriving, but his life was crashing. While Linda was in New York, Millard was forced to care for their children, a rarity in the Fuller home. One night, while he was tucking his son in bed, his son gazed into his eyes and said, "Daddy, I'm glad you're here." There was something about his son's simple but genuine comment that opened Millard's eyes, and the truth about himself filled his heart. He had neglected his family. Millard flew to New York as soon as possible to see his wife. Linda unloaded years of heartbreak. Her silent misery erupted into a long, angry monologue. Millard listened. They reflected on the rise of his business and the fall of their marriage. Millard shared with Linda the disappointment he felt at himself, devastated that he had failed her. Then, Millard made a life-changing decision. He chose to put love first. Millard sold almost everything and gave away most of his money. He founded Habitat for Humanity. He cleansed his life of anything that prevented him from focusing on his marriage. He moved his family into a modest home where he and Linda began to rebuild their marriage. Millard Fuller gave up everything for his wife and his marriage. He decided that their love would be the most important thing in the world to him because he realized that it is the most important thing in the world. Millard achieved great success, but without love in his life, he was bankrupt, and he knew it. Millard understood that if he didn't make love the highest priority in his life, if he didn't succeed in his marriage, then he would fail in his life. It's true, and so is his story. There are millions of people who individually achieve their dreams, but whose love life is a nightmare. Since love conquers all, since it is the dominant force, it determines the experience of your life. Therefore, love should come first. It should be your top priority. Your love life can transform how you experience every other aspect of your life, but no other aspect of your life, no matter how good it is, can compensate for lack of love in your marriage. When you're in love, work is fantastic, you look good, you feel energetic, and you always have enough money. Life is great. But if you're not connected at the core with your spouse, if you're not in love, everything is a problem. An ancient tradition teaches that two people in love can sleep on the edge of a razor blade, but if there is not love between them, no bed will be big enough. Love is the answer. When you have love in your life, nothing else matters. If you don't have it, nothing else will be enough. Put love first in your life. Make it your top priority. How important is your marriage in your life? Does your spouse have your heart, or is it invested elsewhere? Is your marriage your top priority, or do you sometimes give something else the right away? Step 1 of the Marriage Max 4-step plan for connecting your cores and building phenomenal love is to make your spouse and your marriage the absolute highest priority in your life, bar none. In other words, step 1 is to put love first. Just as Millard Fuller became attached to his business when it was his priority, he connected with his wife when she became his priority. Whatever is important to you is what connects with you. Prioritize your spouse, and you'll have a soulmate. Prioritize something else, and you'll be married to it. The only change you need to make. Fortunately, you don't have to liquidate everything in order for your spouse and your marriage to be your top priority. In fact, you don't have to liquidate anything. The point of the Millard Fuller story is not how much Millard was willing to change, but how much he was willing to change his focus. Your priority is the crucial factor. Millard's wife could have been his top priority without him selling anything. Imagine, he could have had it all, love and riches. To transform his marriage, Millard didn't have to turn his whole life upside down. He simply had to change his priorities. He didn't have to leave his business. He simply had to make his marriage more important than his business. What liberating news! Some people are scared to try to improve their marriage because they think it means that they'll have to make dramatic changes in their life. It's not necessarily true. The secret is not simply change, it's change of priority. You can change something about yourself in order to get along better with your spouse. That's certainly not a crime, and your spouse won't complain. But the fact that you get along better does not mean that you will experience true love. Changing can help you get along better. Changing your priority, that will connect your cores and transform your life. Maybe you're wondering if it's possible for you and your spouse to change enough to really please each other. But that's not the critical question. The question is not whether you're willing to change. The question is whether you're willing to change your priorities. Changing won't change much. Changing your priority can change everything. If you're worried about what you might have to change to improve your marriage, let those worries go. If you're waiting for your spouse to change so that your marriage will change, relieve yourself of that anticipation. If you're pressuring your spouse to change, take the pressure off. Instead, decide now that your spouse is the highest priority in your life and begin immediately to behave in ways that reflect that priority. That's the only change you need to make. Put Love First Marriage Assessment. If you began a physical fitness program, you would want to establish your baseline, a measure of where you are now. A good assessment helps you focus on the areas that need the most attention and allows you to track your overall progress. Marriage fitness is no different. The following assessment measures the degree of importance you give to your marriage. Answer the following questions, true or false. Compare your score with the assessment scale given afterwards. Take the test periodically after you begin your marriage fitness program to monitor your progress. True or false? 1. When my spouse phones, I almost always make time to talk. 2. If I'm with my spouse and someone else phones, I usually don't take the call. 3. I speak to my spouse about non-logistical matters at least twice each day. 4. When something significant happens in my life, I almost always share it with my spouse first. 5. I initiate positive, loving physical contact with my spouse at least twice each day. 6. When we go to a social function, I almost always spend at least half my time talking with my spouse. 7. When my spouse walks into the house, I almost always interrupt whatever I'm doing to greet my spouse. 8. When I walk into the house, the first thing I usually do is greet my spouse. 9. I spend more time interacting with my spouse than I spend watching television. 10. I spend more time interacting with my spouse than with anyone else in my life. 11. I usually interrupt whatever I'm doing if my spouse wants my attention. 12. When I need someone to talk to, I almost always talk to my spouse. 13. I almost always recognize in a significant way my spouse's birthday, our anniversary, and other special days. 14. My spouse and I go out alone together at least once each week. 15. My spouse and I go on vacation alone together at least once each year. 16. I have photographs of my spouse in my office, wallet, or gym locker. 17. I have at least one personal and meaningful discussion with my spouse per week for a minimum of 25 minutes. 18. I do unnecessary thoughtful things for my spouse regularly. Calculate the number of times you answered true. Now rate your score. 1 to 8. Out of shape. You need to work hard to increase the importance you give to your spouse and your marriage. These questions indicate the areas you should concentrate on. 9 to 13. Average. But don't settle for average. Your marriage is the most important thing in your life. It should be great. Try to put love first more often. 14 to 18. Marriage fitness champion. You seem to have your priorities straight. What else could you do to give your marriage even higher priority? Prioritizing. When your spouse calls you at work or on your cell phone, do you talk or do you call back because whatever or whoever you're involved with takes priority? Consider the opposite scenario. If you're with your spouse and the phone rings, do you talk or do you call back because your spouse takes priority? Do you have any weekly activities to which you're committed? A card game, a tennis match, a music lesson, bowling night, guys or girls night out, an exercise class, a board meeting, a TV show, religious services, a study group. I'm not suggesting that these activities shouldn't be part of your weekly routine, but let me ask you this. Do you have scheduled time with your spouse each week? Do you have committed time set aside for each other? What does your lifestyle say about what you value most? How do you choose to spend your time and energy? If you told your spouse that you would be home by a certain time, is your commitment to your spouse most important? Or is it more important to make one more phone call, write one more email, play one more round of golf, run one more lap, finish your meal, or spend a few more minutes with your friend? Countless opportunities present themselves every day to proclaim your priority. Review your typical day, week, month, and year. Consider how you can increase the importance that your spouse and your marriage has in your life. Ask your spouse for suggestions and try to implement them into your lifestyle. When you ask your assistant to hold all calls, does she know to make an exception for your spouse? If you're in a meeting and told that your spouse is on the phone, will you take the call, no matter what? Would you take the call if your boss was on the phone, no matter what? If you want to be healthy, you have to make exercise and diet a priority in your life. You have to be conscious of your caloric intake and think about the types of food you eat. You have to plan an exercise routine and commit time to it. In short, you have to make your health a priority in your life. It takes time, thought, energy, and commitment. The same applies to your marriage. If you want to succeed in love, it has to be a priority in your life. And since love is where success matters most, your marriage should be your top priority. Giving and getting attention. To put love first requires time and focus. There are no shortcuts. There is no microwave version. There's no high-speed route. You can't give someone else power of attorney. You have to do it the old-fashioned way. You have to pay attention. I sometimes take my son camping. It intensifies our relationship. One of the benefits of camping is that there are no distractions. We're in the middle of nowhere with nothing to do except build a fire, pitch the tent, and be together. When my son calls my name or tries to get my attention, there's no competition. I'm there for him 100%. It's a bonding experience. Now, you probably can't live in a campground with your spouse and be responsible for only building fires and pitching tents, but you can learn to focus more on your spouse, and you can learn to prioritize better. You probably have the best opportunity to connect with your spouse in the evenings and on weekends. Well, what happens in your house in the evening? Do you and your spouse tune into the TV or pay attention to each other? If you're watching a program or reading a magazine and your spouse wants to talk to you, how do you respond? Do you make your spouse wait, or does your spouse get your immediate attention? Unfortunately, most couples don't talk to each other much anymore. Most couples spend more time facing the TV than they spend facing each other. Turn the TV off. Face each other. Put the magazine down. Read your spouse's expression. Get off the phone with your friend. Talk to your spouse. Log off the web and connect with each other. Pay attention to what's most important. Prioritize your marriage above everything else. Being a good spouse is not about any one Herculean event. It's not enough to be there for your spouse in crisis. Marriage is about being there for your spouse thousands of times, day in and day out, for years. It's about a short chat on the phone, leaving a love note, doing a favor, helping out for no reason, volunteering your time, bringing home a small gift, picking up the dry cleaning, asking the right question. It's about paying attention and focus. Good spouses do small things in great ways. If you don't put love first, you will not be fulfilled. You could be busy with shopping, working, lunch dates, carpool, evening activities, exercise, social events, and TV programs. Everything could be in order. The house might look great. Work could be going well. Your life could feel full. But if you don't have love in your life, your heart will be empty, and you will feel incomplete. Did you ever look at someone's life and wonder how they do it all? They have a successful career, active kids, a rigorous exercise routine, an updated wardrobe, a full social life, and important positions in the community. But something has to give. A person only has so much time and energy. The blanket of life is only so big. If it's pulled up over the head, the toes usually get exposed. Maybe they're not doing it all. Maybe the most important thing, their marriage, is not getting enough attention. Maybe all the external activity in their life is attempting to compensate for a lack of internal completion. Maybe they have everything except the most important thing, love. Two-way gender couples face an extra challenge. In the not-so-distant past, at least one spouse was available when the other finished work. But when both spouses work, the marriage has to wait until both spouses are available. FedEx, DSL, and all the other express business services allow us to accomplish more at a faster pace. But professional demands and personal ambitions result in most people working more and spending less time with their family. The problem is compounded by the fact that two-wage earner families are forced to devote a lot of their non-working time to errands, food shopping, and childcare. By the end of the day, what time and energy is left for the marriage? For two-wage earner marriages, to put love first is even more important and requires even more focus and discipline. What do you do on the weekends? Do you spend more time with your extended family than with your spouse? Do you socialize for hours with your friends and then have nothing to say to your spouse? Who do you talk to at the party, and what does that say about your priority? Is your extended family interfering with your marriage? Are you having intimate discussions with your sister that you should be having with your spouse? Talk with your spouse about how you can reorganize your days and weekends to reflect a higher value for each other and for your marriage. Some people get defensive about this topic because it threatens their lifestyle. Some marriages exist as a matter of convenience and compatibility rather than unity and deep love. Some people are satisfied because they're in a marriage that allows them to do what they want. Some people are more concerned about preserving their autonomy than committing to another person. But this is not love. This is selfish. No matter how happy you might be with your lifestyle, no matter how much you value your job, your golf game, your friends, or your exercise routine, everything would be so much more meaningful and fulfilling if you put love first. If there were an emergency, you would drop everything to be with your spouse, right? I know it doesn't seem like an emergency. No one will die if you don't respond, but it is an emergency. It's a matter of life and love. Drop everything. Be with your spouse. Put love first and take the first step to transforming your marriage and your life. How to be a good parent. Our children are precious to us. They warrant a great deal of our time and energy. But our spouse should come first. Some parents make the mistake of devoting themselves so deeply to their children that they have no time or energy for their spouse. The irony is that unless your spouse comes first, you won't have a good marriage or be a good parent. For the sake of your marriage and for the sake of your children, put your spouse first. If you're driving your children all over town from one activity to the next, and you're too exhausted to be with your spouse in the evening, consider cutting back on some of your children's after-school activities. If you're spending so much money on your kids' clothes that you can't go on a weekend getaway with your spouse, it's time to start relying on hand-me-downs. If you're with your kids until 10 p.m. every night, it's time to enforce an earlier bedtime or teach them to be more independent. Do you give all your time and energy to your children and have nothing left for your spouse? Does your parenting compromise your marriage? If this is the case, you need to change the way you parent so that your spouse has absolute and unchallenged top billing in your life. Don't worry about the consequences to your children. The best thing you can do for them is to have a great marriage. It's probably safe to assume that you want your children to grow up to have true love, a lasting and fulfilling marriage, and ultimate fulfillment in life. Well, who's going to teach them how to achieve this in their life? You are. And, as is always the case, they won't learn it from what you say. They'll learn it from the life you lead. Your example is their teacher. The author, poet, and philosopher Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "Who you are speaks so loudly, I can't hear a word you are saying." Whatever you want your children to achieve, you first have to achieve yourself. And the first step to achieve a phenomenal marriage is to prioritize your spouse more than anything in the world, including your children. Almost every evening, my wife and I and our four children spend time together. The kids, of course, love this part of the day. But once a week, the babysitter arrives at 7 p.m., and my wife and I leave for the evening. The kids sometimes cry, but we leave anyway. They want to be with us every night, but they also want candy for dinner. It's our job to know what's best for them, and what's best for them is for us to spend one night each week alone. Before my wife and I left for one of our private vacations, our older son, who was 6 years old at the time, asked my wife why we were going away for 3 days without him. He was feeling sad. My wife responded, "Because Mommy and Daddy love each other, and we want some time alone." He smiled and kissed us goodbye. He was going to miss us, but I think he understood. Were we being good parents? I believe that going away together for 3 days and that discussion my wife had with him prior to our departure had more impact on his development as a person, particularly as a future husband, than if we had stayed home. There is no doubt you should be willing to make changes for the sake of your children. And some of those changes will affect your marriage. But be careful that the changes you make do not change your priority. There is nothing better for children than to be raised in a home with parents who are soulmates. If children don't see true love, it won't matter how fashionably they dress or how well they play soccer. But if they witness you giving highest priority to your spouse, you will give them the greatest gift of all, an example of how to succeed in love and marriage. And through love, they will find completion in life, peace, and ultimate fulfillment. Be a good parent. Put your spouse first. How to actualize love. The following are 8 exercises to help you put love first. These are not the 8 exercises to put love first. To put love first is more difficult than 8 exercises. You could implement each exercise religiously and still fail to achieve the objective. In order to succeed with put love first, you need a put love first state of mind in addition to implementing these exercises. To cultivate a put love first state of mind, consider reviewing this chapter, attending seminars based on the material, learning it with your spouse, meditating on the idea, and talking about it with your friends and family. To succeed with put love first, it's crucial to consistently remind yourself of the principle in as many ways as possible. On the other hand, you cannot rely exclusively on the right attitude. Correct thinking is not enough to create phenomenal love. You need a discipline to help you actualize your intentions. Marriage fitness is like physical fitness. It's not enough to learn about it. You need an exercise routine too. And it's a combination of the right consciousness and a discipline that produces results. At this point in the chapter, you should be in a put love first state of mind. Here is an accompanying discipline of 8 exercises. Talk charge, exercise 1.1. Program, 5 times daily. When I use my cell phone a lot, I plug it into the car adapter when I drive to give it some juice. When I drive short distances and use the cell phone a lot outside the car, I can't rely on these chargers to keep the phone powered. However, it helps, and when I return home to charge the phone, it reaches full power more quickly. You and your spouse will connect deeply when you spend quality time together, which I will address in a few minutes. However, the modern life is a busy one, and most couples don't get the opportunity to spend quality time often enough. Therefore, I suggest at least 5 talk charges per day, so that you stay connected and keep the power flowing to your cores. A talk charge is any positive verbal interaction with your spouse that lasts a minimum of 1 minute. Now, 1 minute is not a long time, but it must be positive, and you should have at least 5 talk charges per day. There are so many talk charge possibilities. Have fun with them and be creative. Here are a few suggestions. Tell your spouse about your dream when you wake up. Share something cute from the cereal box during breakfast. Phone mid-morning to share how your day is going. Phone again mid-afternoon just to say, I love you. When you return home at the end of the day, don't open the mail or retrieve the phone messages. Concentrate for at least 1 minute on your spouse first. If you have children, let them leave the table after dinner so you and your spouse can talk charge before cleaning up. Before you go to bed, look into the sky together and talk about the mystery of the universe. Or look at your children sleeping in their beds and talk about the miracle of life. There's nothing special about the above examples. However, there are 2 things worth noting about them. First, the topics were not practical. Talking about what's for dinner or who's going to pick up the kids will not be much of a charge for your marriage. Of course, you will need to have practical discussions throughout the day too, but don't count them as one of your talk charges unless you tack on 1 minute to your discussion and change the topic to something more personal. Remember, you're trying to make a soul connection. Second, the examples I cited were spread out during the day. The objective is for you to stay connected and not be out of each other's lives for more than a few hours. 5 phone calls at the end of the day after you realize you're behind on your talk charges is not in the spirit of the exercise. When my wife and I began to talk charge, our marriage changed. Instead of being out of touch for hours, we continually connected. Instead of always talking about plans, the kids, money, dinner, shopping, and all the other logistical matters of life, we started to have fun and talk for the sake of being together. I recommend at least 5 talk charges per day. That doesn't mean that each of you has to initiate 5 talk charges, but there should be 5 total between you. If you find that you're always the one reaching out or always the one receiving, discuss that with your spouse and develop a strategy for better balance. Does regular communication with your spouse feel like a burden? What if you're not a morning person and need your privacy until at least noon? What if you're too busy to stay in touch so frequently? What if you're the kind of person who gets immersed in their work and finds it disruptive to talk charge so frequently? The talk charge exercise is designed to help you and your spouse adjust your priority. It's intended to help you be less self-centered and more love-centered. Talk charges give you and your spouse the opportunity every day and throughout the entire day to put love first. And the more you prioritize your spouse, the more you will connect with your spouse. I love creative writing, and I'm most productive when I immerse myself in the process for many hours consecutively. During the writing of this book, I wrote for 12 hours straight many days, stopping only to use the bathroom and to eat a banana. After a couple of hours, I get into a zone where I become highly focused and extremely productive. That mental state is a special place for me. It feels great, and it's where I do my best work. I try not to let anything interrupt it, except my wife. I always answer the phone when she calls, and sometimes I stop in the middle of a paragraph to touch base with her. We don't talk for long, but we connect. Is it disruptive? It is to my writing, but not to my marriage. And my marriage comes first. Super Talk Charge, Exercise 1.2. Program, once per week. Do you remember all the fascinating discussions you had with your spouse during your courtship? Hours upon hours you would talk about, you probably can't even remember. Long into the night you would converse playfully, laughing, joking, and maybe even crying. These discussions created a bond between you. You fell in love. It wasn't the topics you discussed that were important. It was the connection that talking created between you. There's an ancient tradition which teaches that words from the heart go into the heart. I would add, they join hearts. A super talk charge is a 25-minute dialogue with your spouse. Again, finances, in-laws, carpool, and all of life's logistical matters are off-limits. Talk about something personal, intimate, or romantic. Discuss your philosophy on life. Talk about your new hobby. Reminisce about your courtship. Share your feelings about anything. Get to know each other again. Have fun, laugh together, tell stories, share jokes, recite a poem. I recommend at least one super talk charge per week. You can plan your super talk charge at the beginning of the week and schedule it in your calendar, or you can be spontaneous. I try to keep my ears open for a super talk charge opportunity during the week. Sometimes my wife and I will be speaking about something and an interesting subject matter will come up. If I see we have the time and I think it's an appropriate topic, I'll ask my wife what she thinks about the matter. I'll share my thoughts too, and before you know it, we're deep into a personal and intimate discussion. A super talk charge will return you to the good old days when you and your spouse used to just talk. Do you remember how good it felt to just talk? Plan your super talk charges. Start talking again. Touch charge, exercise 1.3. Program, 3 times daily for each spouse. Retail clerks who graze the hands of customers when exchanging money are rated higher in customer service than those who do not. That's because physical contact affects how we feel about someone more than we realize. Touch creates more than just a physical connection. Take note of how you feel next time someone gently puts their hand on your shoulder. Does it change the nature of the ensuing dialogue? Does it set the stage for a more pleasant discussion? How did their touch make you feel about them? Many people complain that their spouse doesn't pay enough attention to them. Could be that they need to talk more, but they also probably need to touch more. It's critical that you and your spouse touch each other regularly. Loving physical contact will create a connection between you. A gentle touch, a light stroke, or a warm kiss will connect your cores. It's a touch charge. I suggest at least one touch charge in the morning and at least one more in the evening. You should try not to let more than 12 hours go by without being physically attentive to each other. Unlike the talk charge, the three-touch charge per day minimum applies to each spouse, which means that your marriage will experience 6 touch charges per day. If your spouse strokes your cheek while you're reading the newspaper, and you respond by cuddling your spouse's hand, that counts as 1 touch charge for each of you. Not all touches count. If you're taking the milk out of the refrigerator and you accidentally bump into your spouse, it doesn't count as a touch charge. Also, degrading pats on the buttocks or pinches of the tummy don't count either. A touch charge is not simply physical contact. It's positive, loving physical contact. My wife and I sometimes go out of our way, interrupt whatever we're doing, in order to caress each other. Sometimes the first thing I do in the morning when I wake up is roll over and kiss my wife. Touch charges keep us connected, physically and emotionally, and remind us that we are each other's top priority. Date night. Exercise 1.4. Program once per week. I know a couple who were avid tennis players. They enjoyed tennis together throughout their courtship. 2 years after they married, their marriage was in trouble. When was the last time they played tennis together? About 2 years ago. Is tennis only for dating? How did you spend time together when you fell in love? How often did you go out when you were dating? It's time to start dating again. Dating your spouse. I don't think it's possible to succeed in marriage and experience true love without spending at least 1 night a week together. Date night can work magic in your marriage if you follow 4 simple guidelines. 1. Get out of the house. No activity at home counts towards date night. Home will remind you of your practical and logistical matters, and if you have children, well, that's not a date. 2. No movies and no other entertainment that requires you to face in the same direction. You'll need to face each other. You are the entertainment. There's an exception to this rule. If you have enough time, you can watch a movie and then spend a couple of hours talking over dinner. But in any event, the point is that you need at least a couple of hours to really be together. 3. Don't invite anyone else and don't attend anything social. Date night is for you and your spouse only. 4. Schedule at least a couple of hours for date night. Don't tell your oldest child or the babysitter that you'll be back in an hour. Date night should be an evening. Here's a suggestion for parents of small children. Like a physical fitness program, sometimes the hardest part of a marriage fitness program is mustering consistent inspiration. In other words, you may initiate date night this week, but what about next week and the week after? Can you succeed to do it consistently? Well, why test yourself? Here's an easy solution my wife and I discovered. Rather than relying on your initiative each week, find a babysitter to commit to work the same hours every week. Our babysitter arrives 7 p.m. every Wednesday night. We told her not to call to confirm, just come. Now we're set every week with date night. We don't have to find the inspiration to plan it, it's done. The burden is on us to cancel, not to plan. Date night can help transform your marriage, but you have to tune into the spirit of the exercise. 2 people can go on a date and not connect. If you go to the mall and read a magazine while your spouse tries on clothes, that's not a date. If you go to dinner and spend the evening talking to the waiter about how you want your meal prepared, it's not going to have much impact on your marriage. But if you help your spouse pick out an outfit and have fun offering your opinion, you will connect. If you talk over dinner about how you might prepare this dish at home, you will achieve the purpose of date night. My wife and I had a swimming pool in our backyard when we were living in Florida. One date night, we put candles around the pool and went for a night swim. We opened a bottle of wine and toasted each other while standing in the shallow end. We stared up at the starry sky and marveled at the planes that flew overhead. We talked about, well, what's the difference? It was an amazing evening, and it got better as the night went on. Get creative with date night. Experiment and have fun doing things together. Take a board game to a coffee house. See if you can climb that tree on the corner of the block. Go to a local amusement park. How about racing toy cars? Have a picnic in the park? Or just sit down for a quiet meal at a restaurant? Whatever you do, focus on each other. Date night is not about what you do. It's about you. Romantic retreat. Exercise 1.5. Program 3 times per year. In the corporate world, people use various means to stay connected. Telephone, fax, email, meetings, lunches, conferences, water cooler chats, and memos. But often, the best corporations plan a retreat. A corporate retreat is when people who work together go to a peaceful place for a few days and participate in activities designed to intensify their connection with each other. How about a retreat for your marriage? The romantic retreat is a private vacation getaway that will give you and your spouse the opportunity to escape all the distractions of home and work and immerse in each other for a few days. It's a time for long walks and long baths. It's a time to eat in the middle of the night and make love in the middle of the day. It's the ultimate exercise for your core connection. As you might expect, no children, family, or friends can join you on your romantic retreats. Business conferences don't count either, unless you do your retreat before it begins or after the conference ends. You might have some practical concerns about the romantic retreat. Let's explore the cost and the time away from work. The romantic retreat should be at least 3 days and 2 nights. If you can afford the time and the money, you can go for longer, but my experience is that you don't need more than 3 days and 2 nights to accomplish the objective and deeply connect. If you schedule your retreats on the weekend, you probably only need to take 1 day off from work per retreat. Therefore, 3 romantic retreats per year require you to take 3 days off from work. If necessary, you could take unpaid vacation days. If you're not able to take 3 days off from work, you need a new job. And I'm not kidding. If your work life doesn't allow you to tend to your marriage, then you need to find another way to make a living. If you can't earn as much money working somewhere else, consider getting a job making less money. If you can't live on less money, consider reducing your living expenses. I think you get the idea. Put love first. In terms of the cost, let me explain a little more about the romantic retreat, and I think you'll see that it falls within even the most modest budgets. The romantic retreat is not about the destination. It's about you. If you have money to spend, go ahead, knock yourself out, then indulge. Try different spas or boutique hotels. Go to the Bahamas, Palm Springs, or Paris. Consult your travel agent for unusual romantic destinations. And make reservations in the finest restaurants. If your budget is limited, you can accomplish the objective just as well. All you need for a successful romantic retreat is your spouse and a hotel room, or an inn, a log cabin, or a bed and breakfast. It helps to be in a nice area where you can take walks, but you definitely do not need to travel more than a few hours from your home, and there's no need to spend money on airfare. In fact, if you're only going for 3 days and 2 nights, I recommend you find the destination as close as possible to your home so you maximize your time retreating and minimize your time traveling. If you do a little research, you can usually find comfortable places that have special weekend packages. The hotels that cater to the business traveler are often very affordable on the weekends. Expand your search beyond hotels and check out the nearby inns and bed and breakfast establishments. These are actually better suited for a romantic retreat. Scan the travel section of your local newspaper periodically and plan your retreat when you see a good deal. Go online and visit some of the sites that specialize in travel. Do an internet search and see if you can find some bargains in your area. Subscribe to travel bargain email lists. Include your spouse in the search and have fun doing it together. You don't need a fancy place. You only need privacy, your spouse, and a will to connect. When my wife and I do our romantic retreats, we bring our own food. We do this because we don't like to run around to restaurants, and it's also an effective cost-cutting measure. If you don't want to prepare food or your room doesn't have a refrigerator, you can shop locally each day, have pizza delivered, or order from a takeout restaurant. If you plan to eat in the room, make sure it has at least a small table. Since you have to eat when you're home too, the only additional cost for a low-budget romantic retreat is your accommodations, which should be between $50 and $100 per night. Therefore, the cost for three low-budget retreats per year, two nights each, is between $300 and $600, affordable for most budgets. I want to warn you about the post-romantic retreat blues. After 3 days of intimacy, peace and quiet, and relaxation, my wife and I returned to dirty diapers, lots of phone messages, and full inboxes. Life can change from serenity to stress very quickly. Romantic retreat is like a honeymoon 3 times a year. But like a honeymoon, it ends. Prepare yourselves. The key is to carry the energy of your retreat into the routine of your life, and to maintain it using the exercises discussed in this section. Begin planning your first romantic retreat now. It will be magical for your marriage. Business meeting. Exercise 1.6. Program. Once per week. Now that we've discussed the romantic retreat, let's get down to business. You and your spouse probably have an endless list of logistical matters to discuss, including food shopping, budgeting, investments, vacation planning, carpooling, home maintenance, dry cleaning pickup, bill paying, cooking, cleaning, party planning, holiday planning, and auto repair. It's not uncommon for matters like these to monopolize a couple's time and energy, and for a marriage to become a partnership rather than a love affair. Inevitably, you will need to discuss some of these matters with your spouse every day. But how many of the logistical discussions you have with your spouse are urgent? In other words, how many of them could be postponed until a mutually agreeable time? Unless it's urgent, I suggest you table as many business topics as possible for your weekly business meeting. This will ensure that as much of your week as possible will be love and not business. You can keep a running agenda all week long as you think of topics you need to discuss, and then discuss them all at once with your spouse during your business meeting. When business matters are spontaneously scattered in discussions you have with your spouse throughout the entire week, it gives your marriage a business flavor. But if you can table as many of these discussions as possible and fill those moments with love instead, wow, I can't describe what a difference this has made in our marriage. When my wife and I discuss our agenda during our business meeting, I'm not distracted by work, and she doesn't have kids hanging on her. We've agreed not to answer the phone, and neither of us have anywhere else to go because we blocked out the time for each other. It's really an amazing discipline that has changed our life. In addition to going through an agenda, my wife and I confirm the dates and times of all of our commitments, including date night, pick a hobby, any hobby, see chapter 6, and our next business meeting. This avoids confusion about our weekly plans. Since it's a business meeting, no one's feelings get hurt because of the agenda. Sometimes when couples begin an interaction, they're approaching the encounter with different expectations. You want to be intimate, but your spouse wants to discuss the weekly budget. This is a recipe for conflict. But when you schedule a weekly business meeting, no one can be disappointed because they were expecting a romantic encounter. A business meeting is a clearly delineated island of time designated for business purposes. Before you begin your business meeting, make sure your children are asleep, agree not to answer the telephone, and turn off the TV. Sit at a table with a pen and pad and go through your agenda. Make notes, divide responsibility, and agree to update each other at the next business meeting or before then if necessary. The business meeting is truly a powerful exercise. You probably only need to schedule about 45 minutes. It's not a long time, but it changes the tone of the entire week and provides you with more opportunities to connect in love rather than discuss business. Photo op. Exercise 1.7. Program. Office and wallet minimum. This simple exercise will remind you of your spouse and help you connect even when you're out of touch. The idea of the photo op is to put photos of your spouse in locations that you frequent, but which your spouse does not. The most obvious examples are your office, your wallet, and your gym locker. If you don't already have photos of your spouse in those places, consider putting them there now. Are there other locations that make sense for you to hang photos of your spouse? If so, put them there too. I was once in a person's office who proudly hung autographed photos of famous people. There were more photos of the president than there were of his wife. Now, there's nothing wrong with autographed photos of famous people, but I remember being with this man and wondering which relationship was more important to him. Having photos of your spouse in strategic locations reminds you, and is a statement to everyone else, that your spouse is the most important person in your life. Ever since I was a child, my stepfather had a photo collection of my mother on his office walls. There are no family photos there, only photos of my mother. There must be close to 30 8x10 frame photos. It's like a shrine. I didn't appreciate it when I was a child, but I realize now that those photos are a powerful testimony to the space that my mother holds in her husband's heart. More than 30 years later, all the same photos still hang on that wall. Unlike the business meeting, this exercise is easy to implement. Don't miss your photo op. Birthday party. Exercise 1.8. Program. Once per year, per spouse. You may think that having a birthday party for your spouse is not a unique suggestion. You may wonder how it could help your marriage or create a connection between you and your spouse. You may even know couples who threw lavish birthday parties for each other, but who are now split up. But there is a unique element to the birthday party that is original and that makes it effective. That unique element is the invite list. Plan an amazing birthday party for your spouse. Pick a fine restaurant, hire a caterer, or cook a gourmet meal. Decorate your house or the restaurant table with streamers and balloons. Make special signs. Buy a thoughtful gift. Find the perfect card. Hire entertainment. Go all out in every way within whatever budget you can afford. And then invite your spouse. Only your spouse. All that work and I'm inviting only one person, you might ask? That's right. You're inviting only one person. The most important person in the world. If the President of the United States offered to spend his birthday at your house, how many people would you invite? The more important the people, the smaller you want the party. So for the most important person, make it a private affair. You won't have anyone else to greet, cook for, serve, talk to, or hug. Your spouse will have all of you, and you will have all of your spouse. Now that's putting love first. It's reasonable to plan an extravagant party when the invite list includes lots of friends and family. It would be unreasonable to do so and then invite only one person. Be unreasonable. It's very romantic. Now, I'm not opposed to celebrations that include family and friends. They can be a good idea too. But schedule your private celebration first. Make it clear that it is your top priority. I recommend scheduling the birthday party on date night, or, better yet, schedule it during one of your romantic retreats. This prevents your schedule from getting stressed at birthday time. The time for love. How much time does it take to implement these marriage fitness exercises? Well, let's calculate. Talk charge. Exercise 1.1. 5 minutes a day, 30 hours per year. Super talk charge. Exercise 1.2, 25 minutes a week, 22 hours per year. Touch charge, exercise 1.3, 1 hour per year. Date night, exercise 1.4, 2 hours a week, 104 hours per year. Romantic retreat, exercise 1.5, 100 hours per year. Business meeting, exercise 1.6, 45 minutes a week, 39 hours per year. Photo op, exercise 1.7, 1 hour per year. Birthday party, exercise 1.8, 5 hours per year. Total, 302 hours per year. It takes about 302 hours each year to implement this program. There are 8,760 hours in a year, assuming 365 days, which means that it would take you a little more than 3% of your time to put love first, to take the first step toward connecting at your core, transforming your marriage, and discovering ultimate fulfillment in your life. What do you think? Is it worth it? The average person spends between 10 and 20% of their time watching television. I'll leave the commentary to you. If you had to do all the above exercises for your job, for your community, or for your kids, would you do it? Could you do it? I bet you would. I bet you would make it happen. For some reason, we tend not to put the same energy into our marriage, but we should. Take this discipline seriously. Make it happen. Make it your top priority. First things first. Let's do an imaginary exercise. Imagine a bucket filled to its top with large rocks. If I asked you if it were full, you would probably respond, yes. But I could fill the bucket further by pouring in smaller rocks and letting them settle between the larger ones. If I did that and asked you again if the bucket were full, this time you would probably respond, no, and explain that sand could be poured into the bucket to fill the remaining gaps. If I did that and again asked you if the bucket were full, you might suggest that water could be added to further fill the bucket. Finally, after filling the bucket with large rocks, small rocks, sand, and water, the bucket would be full. Nothing else could be added. What's the point? Since we're talking about priorities, you might think that the point is that if you try hard enough, you can always find a little more time to squeeze in what's most important. That answer makes sense, but it's not the most profound point of the exercise. The point of the exercise is that if we didn't put the big rocks in first, they would not have fit at all. What are the big rocks in your life? What's really important? What really matters in the end? What will bring you ultimate fulfillment and meaning? The answer is love. Put it, summary, first. Step one of the Marriage Max four-step plan for connecting your cores and building phenomenal love is to make your spouse and your marriage the absolute highest priority in your life, bar none. In other words, step one is to put love first. To succeed with put love first requires the right attitude and an exercise discipline. Here are eight exercises to help you put love first. One, talk charge. 2. Super talk charge. 3. Touch charge. 4. Date night. 5. Romantic retreat. 6. Business meeting. 7. Photo op. 8. Birthday party. Chapter 5. Give presents. Step 2 of the Marriage Max 4-step plan. Love and giving go hand in hand. My wife and I gave each other many gifts during our courtship. I gave her flowers in Robin Williams videos, that's her favorite actor. She gave me sports shirts and home-cooked meals. We fell in love, and giving was one way we expressed our sentiments. Of course, my wife and I are not unusual. It's common for people in love to give to each other. Almost every retail shop offers gift wrapping because many customers buy for someone other than themselves. FTD, Hallmark, and Diamond Jewelers built businesses helping people express their love through giving. When you give, you make a statement. Giving says, I love you. Unfortunately, after the first few years of marriage, giving between spouses tends to decline. How many husbands, after a few years of marriage, give their wives flowers for no particular reason? As the passion of love fades, so does the desire to express it through giving. Usually, the more love between spouses, the more they give to each other. And the less love between spouses, the less they give to each other. Let's explore the relationship between love and giving further. What really is the correlation between them? Is there something about the dynamic between love and giving that can help you and your spouse connect at your cores and create phenomenal love? Connecting through giving. When I lived in New York, I had a friend who bought a used sports car. The car was nothing special. However, over time, he began to fix it up. He shampooed the inside, painted and waxed the outside, added distinctive hubcaps, ordered personalized license plates, painted pinstripes, installed body side moldings, and put in a new stereo system. Every Sunday he worked on his car, and each week he was more excited than the last. He started to refer to his car as she, and occasionally he gave it a love tap on the hood. No one else was allowed to drive the car, and everyone had to brush off their shoes before getting in. And then one day, he said it. I love this car. My friend didn't love his car when he bought it. What changed? And how does a person fall in love with a car, an inanimate object? My friend loved his car because he continually gave to his car. Giving builds a connection between the giver and the receiver. Giving creates love. And the relationship between giving and the experience of love is so powerful that it works even with inanimate objects. What do you feel a strong affinity to in your life? Do you give a lot of yourself to it? It's normal to give to whoever you love. But the dynamic between love and giving works the other way too. You will love whoever you give to. In the first couple of years of marriage, it's natural to give as a result of the love you feel. But after the first couple of years, you need to give not because you love, but in order to make love. Rather than love inspiring you to give, giving inspires you to love. And the more you give, the more you will love. As the author Leo Tolstoy said, "We do not love people so much for the good they have done us, as for the good we have done them." Step 2 of the Marriage Max 4-step plan for connecting your cores and building phenomenal love is to give to your spouse, specifically to give presents. And that's spelled P-R-E-S-E-N-C-E. Becoming a part of your spouse. How does the dynamic between love and giving work? Why does giving create love? In order to understand, let's explore why my friend loved his car. Why did giving to his car result in him connecting to it so deeply? The fact that my friend would not let anyone drive his car is insightful. Why was it a problem to let someone take it for a spin? The worst-case scenario was an accident, and the insurance company pays to repair the damage. In no time, the car would be like new again. What's the big deal? The problem was that an accident would not have only damaged the car, but also his connection to it. The car could have been replaced or repaired, but his connection to his work would have taken hours to fix. It's not the car that my friend protected so carefully. It was his connection to it, and that can't be replaced by an insurance company. That only comes through giving. Just as my friend connected with his car, you and your spouse can connect with each other. In fact, if a person can connect with a car through unilateral giving, imagine the depth of connection you and your spouse can create by giving to each other. Giving creates a deep connection. The best example is the love and deep connection that parents feel for their children. Parenting is an exercise in perpetual, unconditional giving. And there is almost no greater love than the love a parent feels for their child. Interestingly, for those of us who are both parents and children, although we may love our parents, it does not compare to the love we feel for our children. The love a parent has for their child is much greater than the love a child feels for their parent because parents give more to their children than children give to their parents. Giving great sex. In the most primitive way, Mother Nature teaches that giving between a man and a woman creates an intense connection between them. There is no feeling comparable to the safety, completeness, and ecstasy at the climax of sex. It is there that we feel most connected physically, spiritually, and emotionally. At the peak of lovemaking, when the depth of connection between a man and a woman is most intense, a man and a woman give to each other. Man gives woman his body part, his semen, and the potential for new life. It's easy for a man to give to a woman during lovemaking, but neither the woman nor the man will experience the potential of lovemaking and the possibility of ultimate connectedness unless the woman has the opportunity to give too. If a man is selfish and only interested in his pleasure, lovemaking will not only be unfulfilling for the woman, but to some extent, for the man too. The greatest sexual pleasure for a man is not when he gives of himself. It's when he gives of himself and his wife simultaneously gives to him. When a woman completely opens herself up, physically and emotionally, and gives all of herself during lovemaking, and when her husband reciprocates, at that point, life is complete for both man and woman, and their depth of connection can be expressed only with a primal scream. In the most natural way that man and woman relate, Mother Nature is teaching that giving creates true love and a profound connection. Giving your needs met. There is a wonderful story about one of King Arthur's knights of the Round Table whose name was Sir Gawain. Sir Gawain was a handsome man who could have married any beautiful woman in the kingdom. Out of loyalty to King Arthur, Sir Gawain, in exchange for information that would save the king's life, agreed to marry Ragnell, who was hideous. On their wedding night, Ragnell said, "You have kept your promise and much more. You have never shown me pity or revulsion. All I will ask of you is one kiss." Without hesitation, Sir Gawain leaned over, closed his eyes, and kissed Ragnell. When he opened his eyes, lying beside him was a beautiful woman. Sir Gawain said, "Who are you? Where is my wife? Is this some kind of sorcery?" The woman said, "Gawain, I am your wife, Ragnell. It is time to tell you my story." Ragnell told him about her evil stepbrother, Sir Gromer, who hated her because of her beauty and because she was not obedient to him. So Gromer complained about Ragnell to his mother, who was an evil sorceress, who turned Ragnell into the most hideous woman in the kingdom. Ragnell continued, "There is a second part of the curse I must share with you. Since you have treated me with love and not resentment or pity, I am allowed to give you a choice. I can be a beautiful woman by day, so that all may admire me and consider you a lucky man, but I would become once more the ugly Ragnell by night, when we lie with each other. Or else, I could be the ugly Ragnell by day, only once again to become the beautiful woman you see before you at night. Which would you prefer?" Sir Gawain answered immediately, "This should not be my choice, but yours. You must choose for yourself. I will accept either decision as long as it is your will." With his response, the curse was lifted, and Ragnell was beautiful by day and by night. Sir Gawain was asked to decide which of his needs he wanted met, public honor or personal pleasure. Sir Gawain chose neither. He chose to meet the needs of his wife. And when he chose to meet the needs of his wife, both his needs were met. Sir Gawain got personal pleasure and public honor. If Sir Gawain selected one of his needs, the other would have remained unfulfilled. Ironically, his concern for the needs of his wife resulted in his complete fulfillment. The story of Sir Gawain and Ragnell is reflective of a fascinating and insightful dynamic in your marriage, too. If you try to get your needs met, you will never be completely fulfilled. But if you meet the needs of your spouse, all your needs will be met. How could that be? Why does it work that way? The answer returns us to the core ideology of marriage fitness. Remember the discussion in Chapter 1 about what you really want and need for fulfillment in life? It's love. And love is a result of a deep core connection between you and your spouse. If you can create that connection, you'll have everything in life. All your needs will be met. But interestingly, the way to get all your needs met is to meet the needs of your spouse. Because giving, not receiving, is what builds love. In other words, the way to consummate a connection with your spouse, the result of which will be your fulfillment, is not to focus on your fulfillment, but to focus on giving to your spouse and ensuring their fulfillment. Ironically, if you try to get your needs met, you will fail. If you give to your spouse, you will create a deep connection, which is love, and you'll get everything you need. Most people make the mistake of jockeying with their spouse to try to get their needs met. But while each spouse is manipulating the other to get what they need, no one's satisfied. People confuse what they think they need with their ultimate need. Only love satisfies. Everything else is counterfeit. There was a time when my wife and I had a long list of things we wanted from each other. We fought a lot, and we did everything we could to get the other to give us what we wanted. But the harder we tried, the less we got. The only thing we got more of was stress and disappointment. My wife and I finally got our needs met when we stopped focusing on getting our needs met and started focusing on creating a core connection. And one of the practices that created that core connection was giving to each other. The more we gave to each other, the more we connected, and the more we got what we really needed. Giving got our needs met. I can't remember most of the things I fought so hard to get. I'm not sure if my list of needs were met or not. It doesn't matter. My ultimate need was met. And that changed everything. Love conquers all. Too many people spend their lives trying to get their needs met. It never works. You can't get your needs met. You can only give your needs met. Beyond the Mountain of Darkness. There is an ancient tradition which teaches that Alexander of Macedonia, who was a world conqueror, once traveled beyond the mountains of darkness to a kingdom called Cassia. The king of Cassia offered to show Alexander of Macedonia his system of justice. At that time, two men came before the court. One man bought a plot of land from his neighbor and discovered a hidden treasure buried in it. The buyer claimed that he didn't intend to buy the treasure and didn't even know that it was on the land. Therefore, he insisted that the treasure belonged to his neighbor, the seller. The seller, on the other hand, claimed that his intention was to sell the land and all that it contained, and therefore, the treasure belonged to the buyer. The dispute was resolved when the king of Cassia discovered that the buyer and the seller had a son and a daughter of marriageable age. The king decided that they would marry, that the families would be joined, and that the buyer and the seller would both be givers and receivers of the same treasure. If either neighbor in the story had tried to get the treasure, only one of them would have been satisfied, and the relationship would have been soured. Since they tried to give it to each other, they both got it, and most importantly, they created love in the process. On the Cassia side of the Mountains of Darkness, where people are inclined to give rather than get, there is love and satisfaction. There is satisfaction both because people experience the love and depth of connection that is their ultimate yearning, and because, ironically, in a community of givers, everyone gets their needs met. Move the energy in your home to the Cassius side of the Mountains of Darkness. Make it a place of giving, and you and your spouse will be joined in love and get everything you ever wanted. Giving your needs to your spouse. My wife once asked me to scratch an itch on her back. I started in the middle of her back, and then she guided me. A little to the right, she said. Higher, higher, she said. Now a little to the left, she continued. But I wasn't scratching in the right spot. Just scratch where it itches already, she finally said in frustration. In order to give to your spouse, you have to know what your spouse needs. Where is your spouse's itch? I once heard a story about a couple who were in therapy after 20 years of marriage. The wife complained to the therapist that her husband never said he loved her anymore. The therapist turned to the husband and said, "So, is it true? Do you love her?" The husband turned to his wife and said, "I told you 20 years ago that I loved you. If I changed my mind, I would have let you know." I didn't share this story to show the difference between men and women. The point is not that the man in the story was not expressive, although that's true. My point is that the woman in the story never expressed her needs in 20 years of marriage. She never told her husband that she wanted him to say, "I love you." Never mind that such a thing should be obvious. For whatever reason, to her husband, it was not. And she never made it clear. In order for you and your spouse to give to each other regularly, you have to tell each other about your needs. You have to get to know each other very well. The problem in many marriages is that people don't know each other. They live together, but they're not intimate. Intimacy means having knowledge. The phonetic of the word intimacy gives insight into its meaning. Into-me-si. Can you see deep into your spouse? Can your spouse see deep into you? Do you have intimate knowledge of each other? Do you know what to give each other? Do you understand each other's needs? To create love, you need knowledge of each other. The word the Bible uses for sexual intimacy is the same word it uses for knowledge. Both offer the opportunity to give. Both are a doorway to love. Do you remember your courtship? Do you remember learning something about your spouse and responding with a thoughtful gift or gesture? When I learned that my wife wanted a pure white, fluffy, spa-like towel, something you don't find in a home with four little kids, I brought one home. The gesture took 5 minutes and cost about $6. It meant the world. She got the towel she wanted. We both got the love we need. Did you stop thinking about how you could give and start thinking about how you could get? If you want to get your needs met, get to know your spouse's needs and start giving.